State of Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Chief Justice Burger.
Good morning. Go ahead and be seated. All right. First matter we've got on calendar this morning is docket number 51603, Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe versus Hugh Ricky. Counsel, are you ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Did you want to reserve any time?
Yes, Your Honor. 4 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. I'm Don Springmeier. I'm counsel for the appellant Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe. I intend to devote most of my time to the question posed by the court in the order setting the oral argument, which is the subject of a connection between groundwater and surface water in Nevada law. First, as I believe the court always prefers, I'll start with the standard of review. This court reviews de novo the legal conclusions of the state engineer, and the two central issues in this case arise out of, first, the state engineer's, we believe, erroneous legal conclusion relating to groundwater and surface water, and second, the state engineer's failure to address the critical issue of the existing groundwater use by the tribe on the reservation in the groundwater basin. That failure to address arises out of two separate, also erroneous but related legal conclusions, one relating to a permit and the other relating to implied reservation of rights. I'll get to that if I have time after the groundwater surface water. I start with a quote for the court from the New Mexico Supreme Court in City of Albuquerque versus Reynolds, 379 Pacific 2nd, 73. And I suggest to the court that this represents a broad policy theme in Western water law, which you can find in the treatises and the case law from almost every Western water appropriative rights state. The court said, quote, "It has always been the law that a prior appropriator from a stream may enjoin one from taking waters from an underground source which would otherwise reach the stream," close quote. And that is a broad policy theme for Western water law because it embodies the idea that a senior right should be protected from infringement by a junior pumper or appropriator. And Nevada law should and does and should continue to recognize the connection between surface water and groundwater. And I suggest to the court that everyone, the federal courts, this court, the counties, including Washoe County, and the state engineer's office, all appeared to be in sync on this for 25 years.
What do you make, though, of the oft-quoted in the briefs remark or testimony by the tribe's expert to the effect that granting this permit application would not impact the tribe's surface rights in the Truckee River?
Your Honor, that related specifically and only to claims 1 and 2 because the Truckee River is fully appropriated. The tribe can call on the federal water master for delivery of, let's say, 100 units to satisfy its claims 1 and 2. If the Nevada Land and Resource pumping is taking water from the river, the tribe is still entitled to call on the water master for delivery of more so that it ends up with 100. But that more comes from somebody. The river is fully appropriated. Somebody's rights are going to be injured by that pumping, even though the tribe itself may still get 100 units. Beyond that point, the tribe owns other rights on the river, upstream on the stem, and the public policy part of the argument shows there has been a concerted program which has spent over $20 million by the City of Reno, the City of Sparks, Washoe County, the State of Nevada, the federal government, and the tribe to purchase water rights specifically to enhance the lower stem of the Truckee River, the Indian flow. Those rights are not senior, as is claims 1 and 2, so those rights can be harmed. And one of the points from Griffin, Your Honor, is that somebody, if the river's fully appropriated, it's going to hurt somebody. And the state engineer should not ignore the harm, as in Griffin, there were no protests. He decided on his own that there was going to be harm.
But what about the argument that substantial evidence supports the allocation of the water engineer, as I understand it, subtracted 672 AFA because those were previously committed and then allocated the 1468. And there's a question whether or not 700 of those, of that 1468, is really ultimately attributable to the Truckee River. But what about the balance? What about the 1468 minus 700, which would be 768, if you follow me? That appears to be coming not from Truckee River water under any theory.
That can be true, but it also does not account for the fact that groundwater relating to the Truckee River doesn't just flow in at the top of the basin and flow out at the bottom of the basin, but comes from the sides. That's really what some of these other cases that we discuss in our briefs get to, and the tribe's map or schematic that the engineer prepared, which is found at appendix page 466, shows that when you drill a well, you draw water from the sides, and if you pump long enough, you actually pull water from the river to fill the cone of depression of the well. So it's not just a question of the subsurface flow of the Truckee River entering the basin and leaving the basin. The question is, will that pumping diminish the flow in the river by any one of these three mechanisms? Actually, subsurface flow in the river, inflow from groundwater coming from rainfall on the hills that soaks in, percolates toward the river, or an actual pulling from the river itself by the pumping of the well. I'll start with the statute, because that's the language of the statute itself takes us to the point that I urge the court to reinforce for the state engineer in this case. The statute is now 533.370(5). It's been renumbered periodically, but it's always said that the state engineer shall reject an application if it, quote, conflicts with existing rights, close quote. That's what it's said since 1913. The legislature has never said or implied that the state engineer should reject a groundwater application only if it conflicts with other groundwater rights. And conversely, it's never said the state engineer should reject the surface water application only if it conflicts with other surface water rights. The language is broad. It says if it conflicts with other rights. I would suggest that that leads us to the same policy theme I described from the city of Albuquerque case. Despite all of that, and I'll discuss the case law again in a minute, the state engineer would now have Nevada become the leader, and in fact, I'd suggest the sole member of some kind of new modern flat earth movement, where you have Alfred E. Newman wandering around saying, connection? What connection? Well, that's not where we should be. That's not where we've ever been. That's not where anybody in the West is. So let's not do that in this case. Now, the case law that we can find begins in approximately 1976 with the United States Supreme Court decision in Capert versus U.S., and then in 1977 with the Ninth Circuit decision in Salmon River Canal v. Bell Brand. And both of those support the concept that the two sources can be connected in a particular case and that the senior right will be protected. And that is an implementation of what they saw to be Nevada's law and policy. Now, in 1980, we see this court's seminal and instructive decision in Griffin v. Westergaard. And there we also see, as I just alluded to in answering Justice Pickering's question, the state engineer unilaterally and aggressively protecting the senior surface right from infringement by junior groundwater pumping. The state engineer continued doing that same thing in ruling 2593 in 1980 that involved groundwater appropriations denied because of proximity to the Carson River. And ruling 2630 in 1981, same thing. Ruling 3708 in 1990 to the same effect. And then in 1995, this court decided SERPA v. Washoe, upholding Washoe's refusal to grant SERPA development rights because his groundwater pumping, quote, would impact negatively, close quote, the surface water of Washoe Lake and its stream flow. Then, beginning so far as I can find in 2001, with this ruling, 5079, the state engineer's office flips 180 degrees and begins denying a legal connection between groundwater and surface water and refusing to account for claims of harm to senior surface water rights. And the excuse for that is Nevada calls for the administration of groundwater and surface water separately. Well, okay. You can continue to administer groundwater and surface water separately, but that doesn't relieve you, state engineer, of the obligation of protecting the senior right, whether it's to be infringed by a groundwater or a surface water attempt. So that head-in-the-sand approach continues to the present day, and that's one of the reasons we're here. The state engineer's office has followed this same reversal of course in multiple different new rulings on both the Carson and the Truckee River.
You're at 4 minutes now. You're chewing into your reserve time. Did you want to continue or reserve the balance?
I'll stop there and come back. Thank you, John.
May it please the court. I'm Senior Deputy Attorney General Michael Wohl here today on behalf of the Nevada State Engineer Tracy Taylor and Acting State Engineer Jason King. The arguments regarding the connection between surface water and groundwater are largely a straw man. Nevada law does recognize a hydrologic connection between surface water and groundwater. However, Nevada law also clearly recognizes a right to appropriate groundwater, even in those cases where there may be an adjudicated surface water right in the basin or adjacent to that basin. It has been the consistent practice of the Nevada State Engineer since the passage of the Groundwater Statute in 1939 to allow the appropriation of groundwater up to the perennial yield of the basin, even in those cases where there is a surface water right in the basin. What the tribe is advocating for here is a significant change in the way groundwater is managed in this state. NRS 534.020 specifically provides for the appropriation of underground water and states that it may be appropriated for beneficial use subject to all existing rights to the use thereof. The perennial yield analysis followed by the state engineer in this case and in every other groundwater application strikes a balance between two competing policies. One is a policy of beneficial use, that as much water as can be put to beneficial use in this state should be put to beneficial use. The other policy, of course, was alluded to by Mr. Springmeier, and that is that it should not conflict with existing rights. The perennial yield is the amount of water that can be withdrawn or consumed each year for an indefinite period, or stated somewhat differently, is the amount of water that the amount of use that will leave the underground reservoir intact. The state engineer has not flipped policies, contrary to the arguments that you have heard. The case of Griffin versus Westergaard, decided by this court, in fact, clearly recognizes what the state engineer is doing. In that case, the state engineer denied two applications to appropriate water from a hydrographic basin through which the West Walker River ran. The state engineer denied those applications on the grounds that the groundwater basin was already over-appropriated and that any further appropriations could cause harm both to groundwater rights and to surface water rights by pulling water from the river into the groundwater basin. That case states, if it depletes the underground reservoir, existing groundwater rights will be impaired. If the additional water is replaced from the West Walker River, existing surface water rights will be impaired. The state engineer recognized that fact. However, implicit in that decision is the fact that the state engineer had granted groundwater rights in that basin up to the perennial yield and determined that that would not cause any injury. To a certain degree, this case is about the definition of what a water right is, and particularly a surface water right. The state engineer has consistently held that a groundwater right is that runoff that comes through that surface and has allocated the perennial yield in the groundwater basins as available for appropriation.
But part of the perennial yield is coming from the Truckee River, according to the tribe's theory of the case.
I think that there's a subtle difference here.
Elaborate on that then, please.
It's not a question of the water coming from the Truckee River, but the capture of water that might, at some point, eventually move to the Truckee River. Now, that is recharged to the basin. The state engineer has allowed that appropriation since 1939. The state engineer has rulings in place, orders in place to protect surface water sources from having water taken from them.
If you diverted the full perennial yield out of this basin, which is, what would happen then to the 700 that is tied to the Truckee River, ultimately to its surface rights?
The state engineer has identified that as part of the perennial yield because it flows from an adjacent groundwater basin into this basin.
But would the state engineer concede that that impacts ultimately the surface rights on the Truckee River to the extent that otherwise, if it weren't being diverted as groundwater, it would go into the Truckee River?
I don't know if the state engineer would concede that to that particular underflow. The state engineer would perhaps concede that if we turned off every groundwater right in the state, that some of that water would eventually move to surface water sources.
But in this case, the perennial yield of 2,100, which is the finding by the state engineer, 700 of that 2,100 represents water that is tied to the Truckee River surface rights, correct?
I don't believe that by definition the state engineer would agree with that definition. Because
okay, what is the 2,100 made up of?
Well, we don't dispute that there are 700 acre feet of underflow from the adjacent basin. I believe it was from the Tracy segment. That moves along there, but because that water was recharged, is accounted for as recharge in the Tracy segment and moves from that basin, then it's counted as part of the perennial yield of the adjacent basin. Again, so that's a definitional approach that the state engineer has taken in defining the perennial yield in that basin. I would like to reserve time for co-counsel, of course. I would like to make just two very quick points, if I may. What the tribe's argument... This is a change application. This is not a new appropriation. Now, the state's analysis applies to new appropriations. But this is a change application. The tribe today is arguing that an existing valid water right should be eliminated to benefit the tribe's junior priority surface water right. This is, in fact, turning the priority system on its head. There is nothing in Nevada law that would allow this kind of shuffling to go on
to elevate a
surface water right above a senior priority groundwater.
But that right that you're talking about was not a full-time right, if I understand it correctly. It was a right with a very limited use to it. And now we're talking about a full-time right, which obviously is going to use more water.
In fact, it's going to use less water. Now, over
our previous use was for limited use for mining purposes.
Yes, it was for a limited time. The duration would have been shorter. The amount was greater. In changing that to a permanent right, the state engineer made the determination by reducing the amount of water that could be used, by limiting it to the perennial yield, that it could be used indefinitely without injury.
Did he additionally contemplate how this would affect other users, not just the reservation, but other users that have a right in the system, this additional?
There is no evidence in the record that any other user will be injured. The only right that could even arguably be impacted is the tribe's permitted surface water right. It was permitted under state law that's junior in priority to this right. The last point,
I do have a question on that, though. The permit that was issued and to turn it into a permanent water right, it was by its terms a temporary water right, correct?
Correct.
And they want to convert it to permanent, so they took it down from 2,900 to 2,100, but nonetheless, it's a change in duration of that water right.
In duration, that is correct.
So why is that not a new water right application?
Well, it has not been challenged on those grounds,
okay,
first of all, so we've not been asked to address that question. Second, it I think it acknowledges the status of the basin, that was the amount of water. If you put them all in line, which is what the priority system does, and say these are the relative rights in this basin, we're going to cut it off here at the perennial yield, it recognizes where that right stood in a row as compared to the other rights in the basin. Finally, this court, addressing the public interest, this court has specifically said that the state engineer should look to legislative expressions for public policy. The state engineer has followed that consistently. No authority would justify looking to agreements signed by various governmental entities as expressions of the public policy that the state engineer should follow. It would be no more appropriate to do so there than it would be for the state engineer to look to the statutes of another sister agency for determining the public policy. And this court, in the case of Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe versus Washoe County, specifically said that the state engineer need not and should not look to the authority of other agencies. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Karen Peterson from Allison McKenzie Law Firm, and I represent Nevada Land and Resource Company, and they're the applicant before the state engineer and the holder of the water right permits at issue in this case. And I'm here to tell you that the state engineer's ruling is consistent with the law, and it should be upheld by this court. And there was a significant admission made by the tribe in its reply brief that makes the whole hydrologic connection or hydrologic combination argument moot. And the reason that those arguments are moot is because the state engineer specifically determined that in making his perennial yield determination that there was no hydrologic connection or no hydrologic combination between the groundwater system and the surface water system, as the tribe was urging him to do at that time when he made his perennial yield determination. And now the tribe is acknowledging in its reply brief that it has no dispute with the perennial yield determination that was made by the state engineer. So we as the respondents did not get to make these arguments in our responding briefs because this was an admission that was made by the tribe on page 16 of 18 of its reply brief.
Ms. Peterson,
yes.
If assuming for the moment that the state engineer felt there was a connection, what's your view with respect to the tribe's argument that it should be considered by the state engineer? We have before us yet another example of actions taken by the state engineer relying on past practice, somewhat maybe in disregard of express statutory provisions. Where is the statute that says that the state engineer should operate solely on perennial yield in deciding this question?
Well, the state engineer is given the regulatory authority to administer.
Can you just cite me a statute?
NRS,
quote a statute.
NRS Chapter 534.
A specific statutory provision that says that this decision should rest solely on perennial yield.
There is nothing in the statute that says the state engineer has to rely.
Has the state engineer adopted a regulation that says that?
The state engineer administers.
Is there some document, something that the court can point to that identifies that the decision of the groundwater change is based solely on perennial yield that the court could look to?
The state engineer has relied on groundwater hydrologic studies. that determine from a scientific basis what the perennial yield of a groundwater basin is.
But in terms of the direction that makes up this decision, what is the statutory basis or regulatory basis under which the state engineer bases its decision solely on perennial yield?
Your Honor, I would again point to NRS Chapter 534, which gives the state engineer discretion to govern the groundwater basin and to govern it as he sees fit. And there's statutes in there that says he has the authority to administer each basin on a basin-by-basin basis. And perennial yield is an established scientific concept that is recognized by scientists as a basis for determining groundwater available to appropriate in a basin. And the tribe has acknowledged that it's not disputing the state engineer's perennial yield determination in this case. Mm-hmm. They're arguing that the water at issue here was part of the surface water system, and the state engineer determined, no, it's part of the groundwater system. And now the tribe is acknowledging that it's not disputing the perennial yield determination made by the state engineer in this proceeding. Page 16 of its reply brief. And when they don't challenge the perennial yield determination, they're not challenging the source of where that water is from. And they contended below that that source was part of the surface water system. And now they're acknowledging, because they're not challenging the perennial yield determination, that that is part of the groundwater system. And there's, it makes all their hydrologic interconnection arguments moot, whether you're talking about source, whether you're talking about administration, whether you're talking about management. They're all moot. And the state engineer said, this water that you're talking about, tribe, I tried to find it in the Ore Ditch Decree, which is the federal district court decree that governs the surface water rights on the Truckee River. He said, I tried to find that in the Ore Ditch Decree, and I can't find that water as part of the Ore Ditch Decree. So if it's not part of the surface water system under the Ore Ditch Decree, it must be part of the groundwater system. And I have all these hydrologic studies from a scientific basis that recognize that this water is part of the groundwater system, and so I'm going to determine that it is part of the groundwater system. And again, in the reply brief, the tribe is arguing that it does not dispute this perennial yield determination that was made by the state engineer. So I would submit that because the tribe can't show where this water is under the Ore Ditch Decree for that surface water administration of that whole system, and because the state engineer determined that that water was part of the groundwater system based on these scientific hydrologic studies, that this ruling is supported by substantial evidence and it's legally sound. And the other thing I would like to bring to the court's attention.
You're saying it isn't necessary for the court to reach the interconnection argument.
Yes, it's moot. You don't even have to go there. No need to worry about it. The other thing I do want to bring up.
Maybe someday.
Maybe someday, if it's right. But the other thing I do want to bring up.
Something tells me maybe someday.
is that, you know, this court is not concerned with making policy determinations because those are to be made by the legislature. And in January of 2007, the Interim Committee on the Use, Management, and Allocation of the Resources of the State, there was specific discussion and there was testimony provided by Churchill County before the Legislative Commission that the county was concerned that there was not enough attention being given to the interrelationship of surface and groundwater, and that surface and groundwater are administered separately by the state engineer, and that there needed to be more study in this area. And the recommendation number 14, it's on page 14 and 15 of this interim report, indicates, and it's under groundwater, it's under conjunctive use and management section of this report. It does indicate that the legislature says, yes, we should have further study in this area. So the legislature has not made a determination that it should make a policy change yet with regard to this.
What's the citation to what you're showing?
It's the interim Nevada Legislature Legislative Commission's Committee to Study the Use, Management, and Allocation of Water Resources, and it's the report issued January 2007 by the interim committee.
What's your response to counsel's argument that we have already recognized in Griffin a connection?
Okay.
Assuming that we don't think
the,
it's smooth?
The tribe is mixing up the concepts of hydraulic connectivity, okay? They're, the source of water, surface water and groundwater, those have always been administered separately by the state engineer and by the district
courts. Isn't there a conflict, though, with dicta, or not even dicta, specific statements by the United States Supreme Court as to water use and water rights of the tribe?
No, there's no conflict at all. And Westergaard versus Griffin had to do with...
In United States versus New Mexico, which is a 1978 case, there are statements by the Supreme Court as, since the implied reservation of rights doctrine is based on the necessity of water for the purpose of federal reservation, we hold that the United States can protect its water from subsequent diversion, whether the diversion is of surface or groundwater. Quote.
Correct. And I would point the court to U.S.
You just told me, no, it was not that we have to look at them separately. Whereas U.S. Supreme Court is saying, no, we look at the system. And you're saying Nevada is going to take a course and say, we're going to start carving this up by surface and ground, not looking at the two together. Is that not inconsistent?
Oh, the legislature has specifically
said... I know what the legislature said. I'm talking about the United States Supreme Court and their rulings. Do we not take some understanding of that as we look at this?
Well, the court...
Because of their obligation to protect tribes and how it's come down?
Absolutely, but the U.S. Supreme Court has also stated in U.S. versus Nevada that whatever water the tribe was supposed to get under its reserved right, it got all of it already in the Ordinance Decree litigation.
And what did they get? And I know you said it's not there, but there's a statement, and I understand the engineer doesn't recognize it, but it's the use by the tribe for reservation purposes, I think, is how the quote goes.
Right, and under the Ordinance Decree, the tribe got a lot of water for its primary purpose of its reservation, surface water rights. And apparently now in court, never brought it up before the state engineer, it's contending that it might have this federal reserved right, but never...
I understand the engineer does not accept.
Well...
Is that true or not?
The tribe did not. The tribe didn't even bring it up in front of the state engineer. Didn't bring it up at all. Going back to Westergaard versus Griffin, if I could, that case had to do with impacts and hydrologic impacts. And there was a specific study in front of the state engineer, and it was in front of the district court, that held that there were hydrologic impacts based on pumping groundwater that were going to affect surface water rights and were going to affect other groundwater rights in the basin. We don't have any kind of report like that in this case from a scientific basis that talks about from a hydrologic impact, there's a hydrologic connection that talks about impacts.
Well, right. But that would seem to be a difference between the factual circumstances which existed in the Griffin case and the concession that you raise in this case, that there is no interconnectivity.
Correct.
As opposed to a legal principle that when deciding these questions, the state engineer should take into account when there is factual evidence of interconnectivity, fact in reaching the decision and not basing it solely on perennial yield.
And the tribe concedes that any facts that there was connectivity are negated by its admission that it's accepting the perennial yield definition.
Yeah, I got that argument. I just was making a different assumption. There's a difference, it seems to me, between the factual determination in Griffin that there was evidence supporting the impact versus the concession you argue that exists here, that it doesn't exist. That's different than the legal principle that says that when there is evidence that supports it, it should be considered.
And I would submit, Your Honor, that there's no evidence in this case that that should be considered.
I got that. I'm just asking about the legal principle. If it did exist, should the state engineer have considered it here?
Absolutely. Absolutely, if it did exist.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You know what I'll do, since we did ask quite a few questions, I'll give you 3 minutes.
Good morning, and for the court, my name is Paul Taggart, and I'm the city attorney for the city of Fernwood. I think it's important to understand what the perennial yield term really means. NRS 534-110 directs the state engineer to administer the groundwater of the state of Nevada. It directs him to apply his scientific knowledge to that task. The tool that he uses is perennial yield. It's not a legal term, it's a scientific term. And by its definition, it only includes groundwater. That's why the state engineer can rely on perennial yield as the determination that if he's granted perennial yield, he's not impacting the surface water. I think it's clear that there's a connection between groundwater and surface water, and it's clear that the state law recognizes that. There's nothing inconsistent between saying that there's a regime for state for surface water and a regime for groundwater, but there is a connection between the two, because the scientists partition the water resource between groundwater and surface water, and they decide this is how much is available as surface water, this is how much is available as groundwater. If they're on the groundwater side, and that's what we use the perennial yield term for, and that's where the water's coming from, that should be the end of it. There's no impact on the surface water source. The problem we have here is that the tribe pumps water without a permit on its reservation. And when you add the pumping that the tribe is doing, the 3,000 acre feet, plus the additional water that's been granted here, all of that pumping probably will impact the river. So the real issue is the tribe authorized to pump without a permit and impact the river? Our view is that if Nevada Land Resource applications are properly granted, and we think they were, then the tribe's pumping of water is taking water out of the river. But they own the water rights in the river. And that's why it's not a public interest problem. They have control over the surface water rights in the river at that location. They have control over the groundwater rights in that location based upon their view of the reserved water rights doctrine. They can manage their groundwater and their surface water to address the needs of the fish in Pyramid Lake. Now, Nevada v. U.S. is a very important case to understand here. In the Ore Ditch Decree, the United States government sought claims 1 and 2 for the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe. The tribe later, and that was 1944 and before, and they also sought a significant amount of water to take out of the Truckee River and move to Fallon. The government did not seek enough water for the tribe in the Ore Ditch Decree. And they argued in Nevada v. U.S. that they could come back and get more water for the tribe. And the United States Supreme Court said you can't do that. Now, the reason that's important is if there was a reserve water right for the tribe, it came from the river. And if it, and to whatever extent it existed, the government failed in Ore Ditch Decree when it didn't seek enough water for the tribe. And that's where the remedy lies, and the tribe has sued the government for that failure and in the Indian Claims Commission Court and received significant money for that. So thank you for letting me make my comments.
Any questions?
Yeah, just one. If the court were to agree that with the Nevada case, and there were no implied rights beyond the Ore Ditch Decree, would the tribe still have an argument about the substantial evidence claims in the case?
Well, the tribe has three claimed water rights or actual water rights. They have the reserved right claim, and I think you've asked about the others.
Yes.
They have claims 1 and 2, which are from the Ore Ditch Decree. Their own witness said those would not be impacted. The third right they have is unappropriated water, which is a junior right. If you regulated the system, and I think when we think about why isn't groundwater and surface water managed together, I believe what we're thinking is why aren't they all in the same priority system? Why isn't groundwater and surface water all in the same priority system? The legislature doesn't want that, and I don't think that is necessary to protect all the water rights, but even if you did that, the tribe's junior unappropriated water right would not be impacted because it's a junior right. It came about after this particular application was filed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Your Honors, the tribe has conceded nothing, and nothing is moot. The fact that the state engineer considers the perennial yield of the basin to include X amount of water, and you've just heard Mr. Walls explain that that's because that X moves from the upstream perennial basin, I'm sorry, the upstream basin of Tracy segment to the Dodge Flat basin, and he's counting it from the Tracy segment basin, then he starts counting it again when it gets as it flows under the river into the Dodge Flat basin. That has nothing to do with the fact of whether you're protecting the senior rights on the river or not. And the whole point of this is this is easy in a legal sense. It's fairly hard, but engineering-wise, doable in the practical sense. That is, the state engineer should find, does granting the underground right diminish the flow in the river? If it diminishes the flow in the river, it's harming a senior surface water right. I don't care who it is, because the Truckee River is fully appropriated. Every single drop is has the right to be used by somebody.
But some of the appropriations are junior to the applicants.
No, Your Honor. Okay. The only one that's junior to the applicants is the unappropriated water permit. There are all kinds of rights in the Truckee River that predate 1980.
Right, but you concede that 1 and 2 are not impacted by this, right?
1 and 2 only are not impacted by this. But as I said, the tribe owns other rights it has purchased, different from the unappropriated water permit, different from claims 1 and 2, and under the Water Quality Settlement Agreement, $20 million worth of other people's rights have been bought for the benefit of the lower river. If you allow a groundwater appropriator to pump next to the river in the Dodge Flat Basin and it diminishes the flow in the river, that's taking water that belongs to somebody else and it should not be allowed. That's why it's so simple. It doesn't involve merging the administration of groundwater and surface water. It involves a simple inquiry, and it's an engineering one. Is that pumping going to diminish the flow in the river? If not, fine, away you go. If yes, then it's not allowed, and the application should be denied. Now, this business about the tribe's reserved rights, the reason it's brought up, and Ms. Peterson is not correct, the tribe raised the subject of its pumping of groundwater on the reservation in the hearing, and it's part of the ruling.
But Nevada versus United States says the whole of the tribe's reserved rights when the reservation was created was fully determined in the Ore Ditch Decree.
I believe it says that as to the Truckee River only, Your Honor. And this will be coming before the court in other contexts. For example, a portion of the reservation goes past the mountains to the northwest and into the Smoke Creek Desert. The state engineer has just ordered a general adjudication of the Smoke Creek Desert Basin. The tribe intends to make a claim for an implied reserved right of groundwater on the portion of the reservation which it's not possible to irrigate from the lake or the river or anywhere else because it's on the other side of the mountains. The state engineer will certainly deny that claim because of the principles you've heard discussed here, and we'll be up in front of you on that subject, if not back on this one.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Beyond his time? So on the, you would then say that the United States Supreme Court meant less than it said when it said this cannot be construed as anything less than a claim for the full implied reservation of water rights that were due the Pyramid Lake Indian Reservation. That's what they say about the prior petition in Nevada versus United States.
I agree, Your Honor, but that was only in the context of asking for more water from the Truckee River. There was no evidence, there was no discussion, there was no briefing, there was no issue involved there relating to an implied right for groundwater. That can be fully presented to this court if, for example, this court tells the state engineer, the tribe is pumping water on the reservation, you shouldn't grant these applications until that is figured out, the way Montana did. They said, stop, have a general adjudication of this basin. The tribe then participates, and the United States asserts an implied reserved right, and ultimately this court will decide whether it's valid or not, and if so, how much. Then you know how much unappropriated groundwater there truly is in Dutch Flat Basin, and only then. Otherwise, we end up with the situation where the tribe, as a sovereign, I might point out, needs no permit to pump on its own reservation. It's pumping away. Nevada Fiddler is pumping away on its wells, and are we in competition then? You go and drill next to each other and drill deeper? That's not the way to run a water system. So the right way to do it is the way Montana did. Call a timeout, have a general adjudication, resolve this question of the tribe's entitlement or not to pump groundwater on the reservation, and then you go from there. We've been doing, this has been going on since 1980. Another 10 years doesn't mean anything.
Thank anything you, else? All right, counsel, thank you for your excellent briefs and your arguments. This case will stand submitted.